call this meeting of the Legacy Funding Division to order for March 26th? March 26th. Whatever. It's not March 26th. It's really April 26th. That was a little quiz we had for you guys, if you're paying attention. We're going to forego the approval of the minutes today and proceed with the arts, history, culture portion of the bill. And the plan is to take whatever amendments we have today to try to get this fine piece of legislation into as near pristine shape as we can, and then I'll mark the bill up tomorrow. There will also be public testimony today. So, with that,
Representative Teal?
Excuse me.
You want to come on?
Oh, sure. Sure.
When we get going, then I'll take that. But just wait.
The governor?
Madam Chair?
Okay. Representative Erdahl, do you want to move the arts part of the bill? We're going to do the amendment first.
Madam Chair, let's do Representative Winkler's first, and I'll do mine.
Okay. Representative Winkler, would you like to...
Yep. Madam Chair, I move the A25 amendment. And Madam Chair, members, it's basically just technical language allowing appropriations to be available for until 2015, which is language similar to what was in the bill in the first biennium that this was passed, and is in particular useful for the Purpich Center and their Greater Minnesota Arts Programming. So I would just ask a yes vote, and I think it's not controversial.
Okay.
Madam Chair, it'll just make the bill better.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Erdahl and Representative Winkler. Okay, so then anybody have any questions? All in favor of Amendment 25, signify by saying aye. Mm-hmm.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
Just time out.
We will take a time out.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Chair.
I'm going to move A27 in just a moment, but first,
mm-hmm.
I think I'll move to A27 a couple of oral amendments. On line 1.4, where it says that are not directly related to or necessary, strike or and insert and. And the same thing on 1.22 are not directly related to or necessary for. Strike or and insert and. And I guess we also have to do that on line 2.23. Strike or, insert and. 3.15. Strike or, insert and. And that's it. Thank you to the crack staff for catching that.
Okay, thank
whoever
you.
Whoever it was.
So we'll move that verbal amendment.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions? All in favor of, oh, excuse me, Representative Wagenius. Representative Wagenius, I can't hear you. Thank you.
On line 1424, deleting lake and inserting Rock River, that would read then Shell Rock River.
Which line, please?
14.24. That's your first on line 1.3.
What? Oh, we're working on the amendment. Amendment 27. Am I on the wrong page?
We're working.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. Go ahead.
1.3 on the amendment, and I read that, and then I look back at the bill, and the way it would read to me is Shell Rock River Watershed. Is that correct?
This was just inserted. Mr. Sullivan, could you help us on that one?
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and members, the A27 amendment is drafted to the DE1-1 amendment. So the page and line numbers, I believe, on line 1.3 on the A27, those work for the page and line numbers in the DE1-1. So it would read, as amended, an agreement with the Shell Rock River Watershed District.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. So we're going to approve the verbal amendment changes to the amendment, and then we'll approve the amendment.
Yes.
Okay. So all in favor of the verbal amendments to change the ors to and, as identified, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. And then we're going to take Amendment 27.
I move the A27 amendment.
Okay, as amended? Okay.
As amended, yes.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor of approving the A27 amendment, signify by saying aye, as amended.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. All right, I think we have the bill in the order that you wish, Chairman Erdahl.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I think what I will first do is go through the amendments in the A27, because those are the basic changes from before. And speaking of changes from before, I had this beautifully marked up to explain it to you, and now I just put something like Lake and Rock River at the top, and it messes up my whole orderly procedure here. So I may call a timeout every now and then to make sure I get help on what line we're on, but I'll try to do this. All right. On the amendment, the clean water portion, the main changes on this deal with the some technical cleanup on the availability of appropriation and also on administrative costs. What we did with administrative costs, you know, this has been something that we have been struggling with since the beginning of the session and going back to last year as well, last 2 years with this committee. You recall that I put out a call for suggestions for changes for administrative costs, for indirect costs. We did receive some. These were all then compiled. There was a meeting of our nonpartisan staff along with the legislative auditor, Mr. Nobles, and the committee administrator of this committee. And basically what they suggested, and I bring for your approval today, is this. What you see you know, on my sheet, lines 115 through 2.5 on the next page. Money appropriated in this article may not be spent on activities unless they are directly related to and necessary for a specific appropriation. Money appropriated in this article must not be spent on indirect costs or other institutional overhead charges that are not directly related to or necessary for a specific appropriation. Essentially, we've taken the Lessard-Sams language for the most part, and we've removed the percentage cap that was on previously. Now, that might be a tad risky, but this is the approach that I propose we're taking. If an indirect cost is directly related to a project, it is appropriate. This approach, I think, is well thought out. You can't supplant. If the general fund was used for lights last time, you can't use it for lights this time. Now, the caveat here is that those using this funding will be audited by the legislative auditor, and he will be looking specifically for, is this money directly related to and necessary for a specific appropriation? We're hoping that this technique works. The possibility certainly is large that if it doesn't work, we'll have to revisit this. We'll have to put on a hard cap or do something else next year. But what I'm hoping is that after bringing these different ideas together, bringing these folks together, and all of your suggestions, that this will work. So that is how we try to deal with the administrative cost, which I think is the major change we have here. On the next page, lines, page 52, delete section 20, that deals with the old administrative cost language. The year availability changes a little bit. That's what those other page 52s are about. Under parks and trails, in the bottom of the page, talks about the new working group that is being formed to deal with the parks and trails, and the funding will be dealing with next biennium, not supplemental. There's 3 years availability here. It's pushed out a little bit because the due date for the recommendations was extended out a year and would not be available in time for the supplemental budget. And now, on the bottom of page 3, we get into the State Capital Preservation Commission. This is dealing with the creation of a commission, and I will say that this language came essentially from the State Historical Society, from the CAP Board, from the Department of Administration. This is an agreement worked out with those three, and then Senator Rest also entered in with her suggestions, which is a slight change from what was went past in the Government Operations Committee. What we're doing here is looking at creating a commission to deal with the long-range restoration and renovation and repair of our state capital. I think many of you are aware of the dramatic needs for the capital. We are taking $550,000 out of the reserve fund that we had under the Arts History Culture Part to fund redesign so that hopefully next year we can have a significant bonding proposal to renovate our state capitol, which, if you haven't seen the slides on it, I mean, look at the picture here. Actually didn't even ask that. Yes? Well, no, that's a good one. But that doesn't have scaffolding. It doesn't have canopies before each door. And by the way, with what's loose on top of the Capitol, if it fell, those canopies would kind of be like a paper with a falling rock going through it.
That's comforting to know.
Yeah. So take the tunnel. Of course, there you get asbestos, but don't worry about that so much. There are things that have to be done. Well, people can always disagree with needs, but you know, the state capitol is our state's number one building. It's the most magnificent capitol in the nation, and it is falling into disrepair. You know that we have leaks. You know that we have, some of the paintings in the dome that are falling down. Pieces of plaster. The purpose of this commission is to again do a redesign for long term, and then hopefully next year. Do some significant funding. It's a $260 million price tag right now to do everything that some folks think need to be done. Frankly, there are some projects that, to me, do not have that immediacy. But we need to prioritize, which is what this commission would be doing. And to me, the most important is to restore what we have right now, and then go from there at some other point. But that's what this is about. And so there are several pages on that. And again, we have the concerned partners are all on board on that. Now here's where I get my pages mixed up, because I have to... Where's the arts history culture part? Hold on. Page 8. All right, line 8.6, page 8, deals with the qualifications and the arts, history, culture. Also gets into the reporting and the competitive grants program. It gets into conflict of interest. And regarding conflict of interest, we're going to modify the conflict of interest reporting requirement for entities that award competitive legacy grants. We will require these entities to use the Department of Administration, the Office of Grants Management, conflict of interest policies and procedures, unless the entity already has a policy that is substantially similar. If a person involved in the grant process discloses a conflict of interest, the entity must notify the Legislative Coordinated Commission and provide a person to contact for more information. The LCC must post this information on the legacy website. So we also have a new boiler plate language in there for the arts, history, culture as well. Again, for qualifications on the reporting part, it's a brief description. So what we have tried to do, and this is essentially Article 5 of the bill that I've been talking about now on the consistent administration allowances for all four funds, on reporting, on conflicts of interest. We allow the recipient of legacy funds to post a general contact information on their own mandatory legacy webpage instead of contact information for a specific individual. What we're trying to do here is to be consistent with all the four funds, to be open, to be to allow for accountability, and to allow for transparency. And that's what Article 5 is about. So, those are the reporting portions and the amendments that we have done or are doing. And from that, I will now kind of go back to the beginning, and I think we can maybe more expeditiously actually go through the bill. Once again, we had about $51 million for arts, history, culture. We had roughly $48 million last time. This time, those who made, who received money last time, increased their request to over $90 million. So, it just doesn't work for everyone to get what they're requesting. And so, we have tried to balance, to be fair. In most cases, most of the entities received as much or more than they got before. There were a few cases where they were less. But once again, you know, this is extra money. As the state of Minnesota still faces a $5 billion deficit, it's something good to have. You know, there are those who question this amendment, that people didn't know what they were doing when they voted for it. But, you know, I think it's a great credit to the people of Minnesota that we did have a $1 billion deficit when they put this amendment in and passed it, this constitutional amendment. The state wasn't rolling in money. They made a decision at that time with a $1 billion deficit to still invest in the state's culture, in the state's habitat, environment, water, and parks and trails. So, I just, with that little caveat, looking at the bill, and again, the first parts we have discussed, so going to Article 4. Dealing with the arts, history, and culture. And there it is. Looking on page 57, the Minnesota State Arts Board, in terms of their percentage, went down just a little bit, but actually did get more funding than they received last time. You see the different categories, arts education, arts and cultural heritage, and then the administration. Page 59, the Department of Education receives $3,455,000 for libraries. Can someone help me? If you add $45,000 to that, what do you get?
Which number?
59.10.
Plus 49?
Yeah, 40. Wouldn't that be 3.5 then?
Yeah, 3.5.
Well, actually, I'm just kind of, it's a little inside humor here. I kind of subtracted $45,000 out of that one. Oh, somebody got it. All right. On page 59, Minnesota Historical Society, over the biennium, 24.5. The idea on page 60 was to bump up the grants programs to that go out into the local communities. And as I examine this a little bit more, I mean, you realize of the Historical Society funding, right around half of it actually goes back into the counties. Am I correct, Mr. Kelleher? And I think that's a good thing. Survey of historical and archaeological sites, the digital library, for those of us that went to the History Center with the State Government Finance Committee, we saw the results of work with the digital library, which I thought was impressive as well. Department of Administration, see the amounts there. Public TV, 3.9 each year. Minnesota Public Radio, a total of $2 million, $1 million a year. Association of Minnesota Public Education Radio Stations, I know why you say amperes, 1.5 each year. The zoos, children's museums, I think every children, well, for the most part, our children's museums got $250,000. There's a little bit of confusion with one of them that we can talk about at some point. Science Museum, Minnesota Film Board. Here's where the veterans camps found a home. And then the money, by the way, the veterans camps and the State Capital Preservation Commission both came out of the reserve money, the bottom line money. We still have $1.6 million, but I don't want to go below that. Humanities Center on page 64. We did not reduce the funding for the Councils of Color. The change we made is that it will be administered through competitive grants by the Humanities Center. Civic Education received some funding, trying to help our electorate know more about our political process and voting at a younger age. Now, the Purpich Center received money, Department of Agriculture for county fairs, $1.4 million a year. Another, I think, valuable program in trying to save language, in a disappearing language in this state. The Indian Affairs Council receiving money for language working groups, language preservation, language immersion. And so, that brings us back to the capital funding and also to the reporting function, the reporting part of the bill. So with that, I have gone through the bill. We've gone through the amendment.
Thank you, Chairman Erdahl. Does anyone have questions from the committee at all in regards to the bill? Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that has any questions or any comments to the bill? That would like to come testify. Welcome, and please identify your name for the record.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. I had a couple moments at the end of 2 weeks ago at a meeting, and I just talked about how it's great that Representative Erdahl took on the charge and a keen person in bringing more transparency and accountability to the legacy monies. But I didn't get to share why this is so important. I think it's important for you all to know about that in the public and in the future to build on those things. It was quite a gift that the Minnesota folks gave themselves back in 2008, and that was to have over the next 25 years from that point, starting in 2009, billions of dollars to be used in the four areas which I know all of you are familiar with. But one of the things that came out about that, and part of the go and take and give and take of discussion, was words, accountability, transparency. We will vote for it, but we want to see how it's spent, and we want to be able to see who, where, when, what, those all those W questions that are important. What's important to see when we use the word transparency, particularly with legacy monies, is to look for see-through, to make sure that there's no agendas. So transparency is to make sure that there's things that's clear so people know they're not hidden. It's all the things that's done by the legacy is open to all for verification, accountability. To hold answerable, which includes the legislature all the way through the various spokes that the millions and billions of dollars will be going through, to make sure that if there's a concern, to hold answerable those people that make those kinds of decisions. What Article 5 does, in my judgment, does the following. We were participating in the democracy of voting for the amendment. We voted. We are now watching the people. Two, the language that's in Article 5 gives more direct information to the public. It's made easy and simple. As you know, with anything in the legislative process, there's give and take and compromise, and there's been some of that in some of that direction. But one of the important things, the information for the citizens, for the people, hopefully will not hide in bureaucratic ways of doing things, of hiding information or making it hard for citizens to get information. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is almost 40 years I've been involved in voluntary community service, public service, to the state and the community in which I live in. And some of you have seen that for at least three decades plus. And so I'm very familiar with how bureaucracies will do certain kinds of things. Article 5 is to try to make it easier and simpler for people to get information. And third and finally, is that the people themselves can do the oversight if they are given the tools and the easy access to the information. And hopefully Article 5 is in that direction. Now, there will be people, and I know of people, because I speak with people all the time, the regular folks who want to know why, who, where, when, what, about how legacy money is done. And as this bill is implemented, and they want to take a look at conflicts of interest or those kinds of things, and they are not getting those answers or that information, or bureaucratized stuff back thrown at them, folks will be back next year, and I will be back next year. And I know that in the long run, the bottom line is you want information out there. You want the people to see what is happening with the billions of dollars that they themselves voted as a gift for the next, I think, what, 22 years now? So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to say thank you very much. And again, as I said in a personal memo to Chair Erdahl, it's been a treat. I've worked with hundreds of legislators over the years, and this was one of those that a very open person, particularly on accountability and transparency, because sometimes it's a hard thing to crack sometimes because agencies and other interests are, no, we don't want that kind of thing. We've been open to that. So as we begin, the Senate doesn't have a companion on this side, and I don't know where they're at. I've spoken with Chair Ingebrigtsen, who says, well, maybe we'll take the leadership of what the House does. So hopefully that will be the case when it comes, and I'll be working for that. Thank you very much for the few moments of your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify?
I guess I'll start. My name is Angus Vaughn.
Thank you.
I'm president of the Minnesota Planetarium Society, and as Susan is passing out the information, I'd like to just have an opportunity to testify again today. You have before you the key details of a proposal for $1.4 million over the next biennium to fund a program proposed by my organization, the Minnesota Planetarium Society, and the Bell Museum of Natural History. We have met individually with most of you over the previous weeks, and today we wish to present to you what we think we ought to make room for for this project. We are proposing an arts and culture-based program that will reach all students of all ages throughout the state. We are not asking people to drive to the Twin Cities. We will be bringing a program directly to your districts. Our program will support a network of 8 domed theaters around the state, which is shown on page 3 of your handout. In addition to these sites, we will have another Explorodome portable planetarium to travel throughout the communities that lack access to these other 8 planetariums. In the 4 years that the Explorodome program has been operational, we have reached more than 100,000 students in every corner of this state. Our program is designed to use technology to get people, students and adults alike, outdoors and connect with others in their community who feel similarly. We are using video game style technology to attract the children and the children and all of us adults to focus their enthusiasm on our natural world. This is not the planetarium experience that you or I had as children. The Explorodome program participants experience a virtual world, and they will feel like they're sitting in the back of a wagon heading west across the prairie, or as an early explorer hiking through the woods of Minnesota, or coming across deer, birds, and other wildlife. We are involving a broader community to create this multicultural natural history program, including Native American science educators Annette Lee from St. Cloud State University and Jim Rock, a longtime high school science teacher. Famed Minnesota artists will also be incorporated into this proposal. We are looking to collaborate and help us involved with their colleagues, artists like Jim Brandenburg, world-renowned photographer, who will illustrate Minnesota's Northwoods and Tallgrass Prairies, and Minnesota composer Peter Ostrushko, who will use his music and original composition to tie our history and Minnesota landscapes and wildlife together into a rich multimedia experience.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Susan Weller, Director of the Bell Museum of Natural History at the University of Minnesota. Thank you for the open mic to present testimony today. I just want to add a couple of points on how our project is distinguished from some of the others. Our project concept is grounded in an institutional partnership and a one-time legacy investment to serve all Minnesotans. This project represents a partnership between two nonprofits that are embracing the new normal of our economy. The project before you is one that neither of us can complete alone, but together we can do this. Many of you have gone on record saying that we need to reform education in this state and support our educators. We agree, and here is a vision of how it can work. Our organizations have strong track records in working with local teachers and their students to help them meet and even exceed state standards. Together, we will combine our resources in this partnership to support educators, students, and their families. Our request is a one-time investment to create and launch Cycle of Our Seasons. We propose to implement a proven business model for the Explorer-Dome Space Discovery Program once the content is developed with this legacy investment. And I reiterate, we will use existing resources, the statewide network of planetariums and the traveling Explorer-Dome, to serve all Minnesotans, not just the Twin Cities Metro. To summarize, our program is designed to use technology to get people outdoors. And as some of you have pointed out in our individual conversations, we are using a familiar gaming system, the Xbox 360, to engage our children in their Minnesota's outdoor heritage. Understanding the cycle of our seasons, our connections to the land and sky, is truly important to Minnesota's future. I believe it is our relationship to the outdoors that defines us as Minnesotans and the key reason why the legacy funds exist. On behalf of Angus and myself, I ask you to support our proposal by including it in the House Legacy Bill. I thank you for your attention, and we welcome any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions at all? Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? For or against? Okay. Mr. Strusinski.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Phil Strusinski here representing the Friends of Minnesota Public Television today. And I want to thank this committee for its past support, last biennium, for its financial commitment to support to public television. And we think good things, and the committee's heard a lot about those programs that we produced last year, featuring 1,800 artists and 600 hours of broadcast time and what have you. And we also want to thank the committee and Chair Erdahl for recognizing the contributions we made in the past and by supporting the appropriation for public television going forward for this biennium. And we pledge to bring good things to the public, to do your good work, and certainly to give recognition where it's due to the Legacy Fund and to the voters of Minnesota who made this program available through the supporting the constitutional amendment in 2008. We want to thank you. We've only just begun. We have more artists to feature, certainly, more cultural and historic experiences to share with the public, and more stories to tell. And with this investment, it's successful, completes the process through the legislature, we will further embrace our heritage, showcase our cultural opportunities, and we'll perhaps most importantly, educate our citizens. And lifelong learning, engaging that by maintaining these programs on our websites always available. We pledge to continue to work with education. And in conclusion, I want to say that I've been around here, this is my 39th session, so I've been doing this a while. But I really want to thank the chair and members of this committee, whom I've bugged you, many of you, on more than one occasion. You've been very open to ideas, and we've had a free exchange of ideas. And I appreciate that relationship and cherish that relationship with all of you. I want to recognize the chair that certainly on the administrative fee issue, we've had a lot of discussions about that, and I think that the package that's or the language that's in the bill is very workable for public television. I hope for other grant recipients as well, because it does provide for continued transparency and accountability. We're very comfortable with that. So again, thank you for your faith and confidence in us, and we look forward to doing more and wonderful things for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Mr. Chairman. My name is Barry Tilley. I'm here representing the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. AMPERS is the group of public radio stations that I represent. I'm here to say thank you for the continued confidence you've shown in our ability to work with the arts and cultural heritage communities where our stations are located. And I'm happy to say that we now have uploaded onto the AMPERS.org website over 1,200 programs that have been developed by the various stations of AMPERS, involving many members of the communities that their stations are located in. We're also happy to say that in the neighborhood of 200 of those programs we've developed in cooperation with the Minnesota Historical Society. They're called MN90. They're 90 seconds of tidbits of Minnesota history that are quite popular on the air programs that are broadcast throughout the state. All of those are also available on the AMPERS website. And I just can't say how happy we are to continue to work with the legislature and this committee and provide that cultural and arts and heritage programming and make it available to the listeners free of charge. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Come on up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Larry Redman. I'm here today representing Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, which is the field of arts groups around the state. We're not the state arts agency. We're not the government. We're actually the recipients of this money. I must confess at the beginning of this testimony that I am not an artist. I'm a political artist. I'm here to represent the help of the arts community navigate through these processes. So in many ways, I'm more like those of you around the table than I'm like the people I'm representing. But I also want to begin by thanking our good friend Dean Erdahl, who has, I think, provided great leadership on this bill. And we want to thank you. The arts are the largest recipient of dollars in this section of the bill, and we are appreciative of that. We think this is a very significant moment and an important thing for all the people of our state, and we think it would not be appropriate if we were not to comment about that and say things to that. In that respect, and just to give this a moment of context, because what you're doing here is, once again, I think, a very important and significant thing in our state's history. Over 100 years ago, had people thought that the state of Minnesota would be the center of art and culture in general, it would have been scoffed at. That would have been something that belonged to the cities of New York or Philadelphia or Boston. It's not something that people would have thought that in the plains of Minnesota, in the mining areas, in the forests of Minnesota, in the great lands of Minnesota, would ever come. It would be scoffed at. But in fact, Minnesota is now, at this point in our history, in our nation's history, one of the leading centers of artistic endeavor in this country. We boast organizations that are internationally acclaimed as the finest arts organizations in the world. On the same token, we have a system of arts that are in every single county in this state. It doesn't matter if you live in the smallest hamlet of this state or the largest city, there are arts organizations to participate in within driving distance, short driving distance of your home. That is a significant accomplishment and one that I think we should all be very, very proud of. That has happened largely because of private investment, not because of public investment. This activity was not invented by the government of the state of Minnesota. It was invented by private individuals acting. However, it became quite clear in the last many decades that some greater involvement of the public sector in this area was necessary to make this work. And indeed, prior legislatures have acknowledged that through contributions to the general fund. And we appreciate those dollars. The continuation of those dollars are important. But it was absolutely historic and of national and, in fact, international significance when the people of Minnesota, first with act by the legislature, said that they were going to create a special dedicated revenue source to fund this sort of activity. I think that was an acknowledgement of the importance that we have come. And it flies in the face of that argument of those people 100 years ago who would have scoffed at our ambition for our state and its people. That's a great moment, and what you're doing today underscores that and is part of that. And so we thank Chair Erdahl, we thank members of the committee for that. A few observations I might suggest, however, because this is a long deliberative process and there are 23 years left on this amendment. And I think there are some things that for a future day that is worth considering as you look at this, though the work today is good. First of all, I think, as everyone members knows in the committee, while we're appreciative of the level of funding that we're going to continue to get, which is roughly the same, slightly more, about $20,000, I think, more than in prior years, but nevertheless, a very substantial amount of money and the largest portion, the arts community believes that half of this particular section of the amendment ought to go to the state's traditional system, the State Arts Board and Regional Arts Council. By the way, that 50% would, if looked at against the whole amendment of land and water, would be 10% of the proceeds. During the campaign to pass this amendment, the press regularly referred to this amendment as the Outdoors and Arts Amendment.
I think most people in the public thought half of the money, of the whole of the appropriation to Book the Arts. Nobody suggested that. That wasn't the case. But it actually, at that 50%, would have been just 10%. That's our long-term goal. We're not there today in this proposal, but we nevertheless are appreciative of where that is. But as the legislature moves forward in the future, we think that the legislature should pay attention to the, should always be cognizant, as it is, to the efficiencies as to how it does deliver money to that great arts community in the state. We don't want to see a vast bureaucracy created. We want to see a streamlined government, delivery of those services that do not, that deliver directly to the people of the state and not just to bureaucracy. I must point out that as good as this bill is, this bill now creates one, two, three, perhaps three and a half, you might say, different governmental entities that are giving money to arts organizations. You have the traditional State Arts Board and Regional Arts Council that has served the state so very, very well, the place where we think things should really be directed. It also, though, has a special category in regards to libraries, a very fine area, important venue. That's before a prior legislative session. The film board now this year will be able to make grants for not-for-profit arts. The arts board already does that, by the way, that's there. And in the case of the humanities section, there are actually provisions for museums to receive funding. We're concerned about whether or not we're really streamlining government in this respect, or if, in fact, there is the possibility of going down the road and creating more sort of inefficiency. We don't think we're at that point. We think this is a good point, a good bill. But we think that you need to look at that and beware of that. And I think largely in that regard for the future, I think that the future legislatures, this legislature, has to be very, very concerned about the possibility of falling into a system of earmarking. There are 14 to 1,500 arts organizations in the state. There are public television stations, public radio stations. There are various other cultural organizations, all that are important. Everybody who's been in this room and before you has a good and noble cause for our people. But if, for instance, just looking at the arts organization, if, in fact, every arts organization in the state sent a version of me up here to petition you for a line item item in this budget, what kind of a process would you have? And what kind of time? How would you deal with that? This, in the past and in the present, the way the state has dealt with that is by having a competent, efficient organization in the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Council systems that could deliver those services and then come back with full accountability to this legislature for people who have election certificates who are the ultimate fiduciaries of these people and have that authority. We think that was, that has been a good system. We think it has served the state exceedingly well. I'm not the government, I'm the field, telling you we think that was a good system. We think that's the direction, and we think, quite frankly, that to the extent that as the legacy amendment is developed in future years, that those values are built strongly into the system in the future, so that 100 years from today, people will look back and say that look what happened in this extraordinary time, look what this was done, that it maintained this extraordinary thing that was built over the 100 years before that, and in fact built it to a new height. Thank you for what you've done. Thank you for these dollars. And we look forward in the future to great new heights for our state.
Thank you, Mr. Redman. Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Kelleher?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, Chair Erdahl. I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. A couple of months ago, we provided this committee with an update on funding for history programs and projects in the first biennium from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. We and other members of the history community are very proud of the work that we have accomplished. 474 grants have gone out to all 87 counties, and these grants cover 343 different organizations doing the work of preserving our state's past, and we have also served thousands of school children through educational programs statewide. As we also discussed at a subsequent committee meeting, a coalition of groups working in the history field has made a recommendation which your bill generally mirrors. For that, we are extremely appreciative. This group includes the Minnesota Alliance of Local History Museums, the Council for Minnesota Archaeology, the Minnesota Archaeological Society, Preservation Alliance of Minnesota, Minnesota's Historic Northwest, the Minnesota Historical Society, Minnesota's History Advocates for Research, and the Minnesota Digital Library. So there's one of me instead of all of those people coming up to testify. We sincerely appreciate your support, and we're excited to get started on the next biennium of funding to help preserve Minnesota's past statewide, not just because it's a nice thing to do, but also because of the educational and economic development benefits that have resulted and will result from these history expenditures. Madam Chair, you've heard from the proponents of a number of history projects, which you will not directly fund in this bill, but rather asking those groups to work with us, the Minnesota Historical Society, through the grants process. And we'd like to reiterate our offer to work with potential grantees. Our Grants and Field Services staff stands ready to assist potential grantees who wish to have a quality project and a quality application. Again, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Chair Erdahl, and members of the committee, we sincerely thank you for your hard work and the recommendations for history contained in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. Is there anyone else that would wish to testify?
So, Madam Chair, I'd just like to say one thing that I kind of missed before, and that is that, so everyone understands, those who made requests of us through the process and were not reflected directly in this bill, those requests, still will be looked at. We will disperse them to the appropriate entity. If it has to do with history, it'll go to the Historical Society. We will send letters to the entities saying that we have heard this proposal in our committee. And we will also send letters back to those requesting, telling them where their proposal has been directed. And actually, that I think dovetails a little bit with what Mr. Redmond was talking about, in not hearing and approving of every single proposal here within this committee. Although I know that many of you wish to do that, and I kept having to convince people we didn't want to go till 2 a.m. So we could do it this way, and it seemed like a better way to do it, to disperse to the larger entities and then have it worked on through grant programs or other means.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. I believe then that is all we're doing today. We're not taking any action on this, and
we'll mark it up tomorrow.
Okay.
And really, it could be a pretty short meeting tomorrow.
Okay. Well, if that's it then, I guess we're adjourned. Thank you, everyone.